everyone. I'm Heidi.
And I'm Brittany.
And this is Transforming Together, the HopeWorks podcast.
Yes. And this month we are transforming the way that we think about quote unquote certified woke bae Aziz Ansari in the wake of a babe expose about a date gone wrong.
So we're going to dive in. We have a lot to say about that. But first, we want to do a few quick HopeWorks updates. Mm-hmm. So HopeWorks is still accepting submissions to our Dragonfly Arts magazine through the end of February. There's more info about that on our website. You don't have to be a survivor to submit, and it can be about anything tied to social justice. If you hear this podcast or if you've got something to say about consent culture, make some art about it, submit it. We'd love to see it.
Yes. We've also got our annual fundraiser Hope Bowl coming up on Saturday, March 3rd. That is going to be at the Brunswick Lanes in Columbia. More of that information will also be available on our website.
And lastly, I will be one of the facilitators for a workshop coming up on February 24th called Building Healthier Teen Relationships. And it's for parents and their students, elementary through high school, with different simultaneous breakout sessions.
Yeah.
So we encourage you to look for more information coming on that as well.
Yes, also a Saturday. So a couple of things. First, content warning. The Babe article that we're going to be referring to has some pretty explicit mention of like oral sex, the word dick. We're not necessarily going to censor our language around that. So there is a content warning for that. Also, this podcast is going to be way more quote heavy than most of our podcasts usually are. And I think that's just for the simple fact that there has been tremendous response to this Babe article, basically called I Went Out with Aziz Ansari and Had the Worst Date of My Life. So the article is by someone named Katie Way, and she is telling the story of, this is not her real name, but for safety purposes, her name is Grace. And that's who we're going to be referring to for the rest of the podcast.
So there was a night back in September after, I think it was an Emmys after party in LA, that Grace met Ansari and they exchanged numbers. Mm-hmm. And then a little while later, back in New York where they both lived, they went out on a date. Mm-hmm. And the date wasn't the best of Grace's life. She noticed that when they had dinner, it felt like they were speeding right out of there. And Ansari was really eager to get back to his apartment as soon as possible.
She hadn't even finished her wine glass. And I think that was the first moment where she started to register that something was kind of weird. He was very abrupt in trying to get back to his apartment.
So then they get back to the apartment, and it's a series of incredibly uncomfortable to read events where consistently throughout the night, Aziz Ansari is pursuing Grace. And
within moments of arriving back at his apartment, he was already undressing her and removing his clothes. He began oral sex on her almost instantly. And it was when he went to go rush to get a condom within moments of being back there where she was like, whoa, like, let's slow down. I'm not, you know, let's take it a little bit slower than this.
And what she describes throughout the night is this constant, she describes it as almost like a cat and mouse game where he's touching her, putting her hands on his body in ways that make her uncomfortable, and she's consistently removing her hands or skirting away, or it's like a chase around the apartment where she feels like she can't escape his constant sexual attention. And she describes throughout the night the ways that she expressed this discomfort, primarily through those physical cues of moving her body away or moving his hands away from her, or saying things like, oh, well, can we chill out a little bit?
Or maybe the next date.
Maybe the next date, which he responded to by saying, oh, can I pour you another glass of wine and that'll be the second date?
Yeah.
Which, ew. That feels like trying to get someone to drink more to coerce them into consent.
Yes. So, like, worth noting here, and, you know, there are, and we're going to get into this, there are all sorts of responses to Grace's story. And if we're thinking of it in a binary, you know, there are those who believe Grace and understand Grace, and then there are those who buy into the idea that this story, along with hashtag Me Too, along with hashtag Time's Up, is this vigilante witch hunt against men. But what is consistent throughout Grace's story is mention of the speed, how quickly things escalated between them, and the repetitive, persistent nature of Ansari's advances. And she expresses that, this is a quote from her, most of my discomfort was expressed in me pulling away and mumbling. I know that my hand stopped moving at some points. I stopped moving my lips and turned cold.
So one of the things we want to talk about is the fight, flight, or freeze response. Yes. And most people have heard of fight or flight, but haven't necessarily been taught that freeze element, mm-hmm. which is the idea that for mammals in general, including yeah. people, when you're in a state of crisis of some sort, your responses are to fight whoever is assailing you, to try and get out of there. But sometimes those aren't an option. Sometimes mm-hmm. you know that you won't be able to run away fast enough, or that the other person or animal or creature, if it's we're in the animal world, is not going, you're not going to be able to fight them off. And sometimes you just freeze.
Yeah.
Because that's the safest thing for your body to do and your mind to do emotionally, is just to just shut down and survive mm-hmm. through whatever's going on so that you can live to see another day.
Another term for this is tonic immobility. It just basically refers to mobile paralysis in situations of intense fear. And we just acknowledge this because this is something that we understand to be a very common response for sexual assault survivors. And we also understand that it's one of the reasons why people are often not believed and or victim blamed. Well, why didn't you just run away? Trauma, tonic immobility, freeze response. It is a thing. There is a lot of research on it. Feel free.
And there's a lot of other factors at mm-hmm. play in the situation, which we're going to tease out. Part of them is the power dynamic. Aziz's public persona as being this woke bae, as being mm-hmm. a feminist, as talking about how he knows the ins and outs of consent.
So for me, that was like a really important part of what Grace shares about why she didn't leave sooner. There's two pieces to that for me. So one, she's just acknowledging, right, this constant barrage of advances. She's acknowledging the speed with which things are happening. I know that for me personally, and this is something that I have learned about myself through emotionally abusive toxic relationships, is that I process things very slowly. Like, I need a minute to understand what's happening and to orient myself to what's happening in any given moment. And so as she's like trying to reject his advances, first she does it with a lot of nonverbal cues. Eventually she steps away to go to the bathroom, and she shares that she was in the bathroom for about 5 minutes trying to gather herself, splashing water on her face, obviously taking a minute for her mind to catch up with what she's experiencing. And so when she comes out of the bathroom, Ansari asks her, you know, is everything okay? And so she tells him, at this point adding a verbal component, I don't want to feel forced, because if I feel forced, I'm going to hate you, and I'd rather not hate you. So very explicitly at that moment, she's verbally saying, I'm feeling pressured right now, and I don't want to do this. So initially she's happy with how he responds, and he's like, of course, you know, it's only fun if we're both having fun. And he's like, let's go sit on the couch and watch some TV. Moments later, he is gesturing back at his penis and, you know, suggesting that she give him oral sex.
That to me is just a picture of someone who understands the words to say around mm-hmm. consent, mm-hmm. but doesn't understand what consent actually is in practice.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that a lot more.
Yeah. And so, you know, things continue in this cat and mouse game. And eventually she's like, no, like, they put their clothes back on. He suggests that they just sit down and watch Seinfeld, right? And so this is what becomes meaningful for me. At that point, when they're sitting down on the couch watching Seinfeld, that's when she says, it really hit me that I was violated. I felt really emotional all at once when we sat down there, that the whole experience was actually horrible. And that's where I just felt so much resonance, that it takes time to process what is happening in a given moment. And she adds, like, that there was this glaring contrast between Aziz's comedy persona, and, you know, she had read excerpts from his book, Modern Romance. She is a fan of this guy, and we didn't actually explain who Ansari is.
Right. So if you that name doesn't register for you, he's most well known as Tom Haverford on Parks and Rec, mm-hmm. Treat Yourself. And he also has a TV show on Netflix called Master of None,
yes,
among other things that he's done. He's also a stand-up comedian, and he wrote that book.
Yeah. And he's a self-declared feminist, right? So he has been on Letterman. He has been in these public spaces acknowledging that he is a feminist. He wore black to the Golden Globes. He participated in that Time's Up. He wore a pin on his tux that night. And so, you know, Grace is acknowledging this glaring contrast between who she believed him to be and how he was presenting himself, as a part of, like, why she felt so stunned and shocked at his behavior that night in his apartment.
And so this complicates things, right? And the response that Aziz Ansari has afterwards complicates things. And we're not here in this podcast to say Aziz Ansari is formally canceled, he should never have a career again,
he needs to be locked up or incarcerated.
Exactly.
That's not the conversation we're having here.
So in part, I mean, we wouldn't say that specifically anyway, but in part it's because of how he responded. Mm-hmm. So Grace had been texting with her friends the next morning, kind of seeking validation for why this felt so horrible. And he ends up texting her mm-hmm. and says, hey, I had a good time last night, hoping some of the pictures I took at that party came out, whatever. And she texts back something along the lines of, it's interesting that you said you had a good time, because for me, it definitely wasn't that. Mm-hmm. And here's kind of why, and I'm letting you know this so that another girl in the future doesn't have this experience of feeling like she wasn't being listened to and being violated in this way. And he texts back to her something along the lines of, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't experience it that way, and I'll take this to heart, and I'm going to consider seriously what you said.
Yeah.
And then after this article was published, which Grace was inspired to come out about this story after seeing Aziz Ansari at the Golden Globes and feeling like there was some hypocrisy there, mm-hmm. he's released a statement saying something pretty similar to what that text says, which is, I had an encounter back in September. He doesn't deny it. He mm-hmm. says that he had this encounter, and I at the time believed it was consensual, but it seems like this person is saying otherwise, and I'm going to take some serious time to think and reflect on this, mm-hmm. and I still believe that this movement and this work is really important.
Yes. And we want to jump into some of the responses, like actual articles and op-eds that were published in response to Grace's story. I want to add that at some point we're going to get back to this idea of like, oh, if someone actually performs oral sex or receives oral sex, clearly that's consensual. We're going to talk a little bit more about how that it's not so easy to say that. But there were two main articles that we want to reference in response to Grace's story. And again, Grace's story was shared on a site called Babe. And then the two main articles that we've been grappling with in preparation for this podcast, there was a New York Times article written by Barry Weiss called Aziz Ansari is guilty, .. of not being a mind reader. And then the next one by The Atlantic called The Humiliation of Aziz Ansari, this one written by Caitlin Flanagan.
I just want to read the taglines underneath the titles of both those articles because they really get me. The Barry Weiss one is, I'm apparently the victim of sexual assault, and if you're a sexually active woman in the 21st century, chances are that you are too. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the first issues with these articles, is that they create this false dichotomy between rape and acceptable sex. Yes. So something is either legal or not legal, and that's the only thing that matters in whether we should be considering what's wrong mm-hmm. with sex. And then the other piece is summed up well in a Caitlin Flanagan quote, which is, allegations against the comedian are proof that women are angry, temporarily powerful, and very, very dangerous.
Yeah. So there's a response from both men and women around hashtag Me Too, around Time's Up, that this is, again, as I mentioned earlier, some like vigilante witch hunt to punish men and to ruin their lives. The Caitlin Flanagan article describes Grace's story as like 3,000 words of revenge porn. So basically, Grace is just a woman scorned who is deciding to destroy Ansari's life in the process.
Which Aziz Ansari hasn't and probably won't face any real consequences for mm-hmm. this. And again, that's not what we're calling for.
Yeah.
But
we need to talk about how this idea of quote unquote bad sex is connected to rape culture. And we've talked about rape culture. We've talked about the nuances of consent in previous episodes of the podcast. And we have these conversations in our workshops with the community.
So just to explain what Weiss and Flanagan's arguments are falling along, there's this kind of duality around mm-hmm. how they're treating women, or in this case, Grace in the article, the idea that she should have been stronger, that she should have verbally said no louder mm-hmm. earlier, and that she should have gotten out of there as soon as possible and been very more clear cut with that, because otherwise Aziz Ansari isn't a mind reader. Mm-hmm. And they're simultaneously talking about how this demand from the feminist movement, but not their feminist movement, the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. to ask for more clear and enthusiastic consent and to allow for these nuances in consent is making women weak or taking away their agency and their power, because it's saying that, and it's so hard for me to wrap my mind around what they're saying, but that women, if we're saying that it's on the part of both parties mm-hmm. to pay attention to those cues, that's taking away women's agency to say no and slam the door, smack the guy and walk out like mm-hmm. they say Grace should have.
Yeah. And there's a lot that we could parse out from this. I mean, there's such clear victim blaming in particularly Caitlin Flanagan's article. I think something that we feel like is really important to mention, and you see this with catcalling and street harassment, there's this paradox here, right? Where if a woman is hollered at on the street, she's told to smile, right? Women are very often told to smile as they're walking down the street. Unsolicited advice from men who really have no need or reason to say the things that they're saying. So there's this idea that we're supposed to respond nice
and simultaneously shout no
and be firm and be assertive about that. So it's like a no-win situation. And time and time again, if you look at headlines, first of all, the CDC just released a report that the number one cause of women dying through homicide is in intimate relationships, right? There's a Teen Vogue article that states that 45% of women who experience sexual assault and 29% of men who experience sexual assault experience that assault in the context of their intimate relationships. But there's this idea that we're supposed to respond kindly and or assertively. However, when folks do that, you can see in articles, people are dying for doing that. Like there are headlines about a woman who had her throat slit for rejecting a man's advances on the street. Like, and this is not hard to find. You see this over and over and over again. So there is this very real reality for someone in Grace's position that you don't know if your rejection is going to be met with. And it's not even rejection, right? It's like simply saying, no, I'm not ready for this. This is crossing a boundary for me. But because that's interpreted as rejection, we have to find this nice way of saying, I'm not interested in that. And it's being nice. It's being polite. It's placating. And no matter, like, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't.
Absolutely. And that's so frustrating. And the other piece to it is this idea of where did this come from? This mm-hmm. idea of affirmative consent. And all of a sudden, first you're just demanding, don't rape you. Okay, sure. Now you want us to do what? You want us to get enthusiastic consent? That's not realistic.
Yeah.
People don't do that in relationships. Another article that I really love to keep pulling on articles is one from Lindy West, also in the New York Times, mm-hmm. called Aziz, We Tried to Warn You. And she talks about how sexual norms have changed. She says, to quote, the line between seduction and coercion has shifted and shifted quickly over the past few years. When I was in my 20s, a decade ago, sex was something of a melee. No means no was the only rule, and it was still solidly acceptable in mainstream social circles to bother somebody until they agreed to have sex with you. At the movies, this was called romantic comedy. What's not true is the suggestion that complex conversations about consent are new territory, or that men weren't given ample opportunity to catch up.
Yeah. So can we please talk about, like, the romantic comedy aspect and how we have literally grown up watching films, television, hearing music that encourages this idea that if a guy is just persistent enough, if he has, and we've talked about this before, grand gestures, that if you do a grand enough gesture that you can convince someone to have sex with you. And that it's actually like a part of the game because it's the thrill of the chase, right?
Right. And that it's men's role to pursue and women's job to say no, 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 no until they say yes.
And to play hard to get.
Exactly.
So we're going to be talking about two Atlantic articles. One is the Trash article by Caitlin Flanagan. But then there is a really lovely article in the Atlantic called Aziz Ansari and the Paradox of No. This was written by Megan Garber. And I really love the way that she talks about this. She talks about these framings and that the fact that they treat flirtation as a contest of wills, right? So you have someone who is receiving the advance and someone who is giving the advance. She talks about it as kind of like a volleyball, cause and effect, call and response, and as this binary where you have, again, that person who is advancing and the person who is receiving the advance, and that it's as simple as either swatting their hand away and rejecting them or accepting the advance.
And there's also a metaphor she uses about it's a competition and they're not on the same team.
Yes.
It's like someone's going to win and someone's going to lose in this model in the sense of giving in, mm-hmm. which is so contrary to the model of consent that we talk about, which is two equal partners engaging in something together that they're co-creating.
Yes. Participants, you know, that you have two people participating in a process. And it goes back to something that Heidi and I very often talk about in our workshops with folks when we're having conversations about consent. which is the fact that consent is not about being able to check off a box and say, hey, I had this conversation, now I can avoid liability and I won't be convicted of legal rape or assault. That fundamentally, the conversation about consent, the dialogue, is about showing care and concern for your partner and your partner's needs, desires, boundaries, etc.
When showing fundamental empathy, mm-hmm. one of the Facebook responses I saw to this situation, this discussion, was from someone named Aviva Pressman. And she says, you know why women don't scream bloody murder and then leave when we're in Aziz Ansari situations? Because we don't know we're in the middle of an assault. We wrongly assume that we're in a room with a person who views us as a human, who is equal and worthy, and whose feelings you care about in a basic decency sort of way. We don't want to hurt your feelings because we have basic human empathy and we know getting rejected is hurtful. So we say, I don't think it's going to happen tonight, or I don't want to feel forced, or we walk away and put our clothes back on, or we remove your hands from our bodies because we wrongly assume that you have even the tiniest fraction of basic human empathy for us mm-hmm. because we assume that you would care that we're having a good time. And if you cared for us, then those signals would be huge for you. It's only when you don't actually give a shit about how we feel that those signals can be so easily overlooked.
Yes. I just want to take a second to let that land on folks. There was another tweet, and you know, there's both the op-eds and the articles that were written, but also just this amazing response within Twitter and Facebook and in comments on the articles and in comments on Facebook posts, etc. There was this really great tweet by someone named Melinda Taub, and she said, I feel like this will get lost in the convo about if Aziz Ansari did sexual assault. But that feeling when you shut down and stop responding and the guy just keeps going and you realize that he doesn't care if you're in your body or not, it's awful too, right? So we set up this false dichotomy between capital R rape, and Megan Garber does a really great job about talking about how we have this binary of there's either assault or there's sex positivity, which a lot of, you know, a lot of us young feminists have kind of embraced as this signifier of sexual liberation. But what's happened in creating that binary is we have failed to have really necessary, nuanced conversations about how each party involved in a sexual experience should be allowed to have pleasure, should be allowed to engage in that experience to enjoy themselves and to feel safe and to feel satisfied. And that's, I feel like, such a key part of what's missing right now.
Right. And on the flip side, that sex can be traumatic and hurtful.
Even if it's not capital R rape.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what we need to be pushing for. We need to be going deeper in these conversations. That's Rebecca Traister talks mm-hmm. about that, about how in this sense, feminism isn't radical enough in yeah. having these conversations. How can we push for exactly what you were saying, that pleasurable, consensual, participatory sex, and demand that of people of all genders mm-hmm. having sexual encounters?
Heidi and I didn't talk about this when we were outlining this podcast, but there is this wonderful TED Talk by Peggy Orenstein, who did a bunch of research with young girls and women. And as a baseline, most girls and women are basing whether or not a sexual experience was enjoyable on the absence of pain. So for men, they're basing their experience of whether sex is enjoyable or not by whether they ejaculate an orgasm. Whereas for most girls and women, if it's not painful, that's enough for them to say that it was an enjoyable experience. And we really need to talk about how skewed that is.
Well, that relates to me with what we were talking a little bit about before, about how people are up in arms about Grace's account because she did give Aziz Ansari at least mm-hmm. one blowjob and was interacting. And that's not consent to everything else he was doing. So often in situations like that, women will be in a situation where I'll go ahead and give him a blowjob or a hand job because then maybe that will be enough.
Yes.
And he won't coerce me to keep doing other things that I don't want to do that feel even more violating.
Yes.
To me.
Absolutely. And like, I resonated with that so much. We were reading about that in a really great Teen Vogue article also. Like this idea of, I mean, it reaches a point, you know, when you're trying to figure out, okay, if I just do this, then maybe the rest of it will stop. Maybe the rest of the pursuit will stop. I can speak from experience that like in my most unhealthy relationship, there were situations of like, I'm just going to do this so that you can get your orgasm and then you'll leave me alone for the rest of the stuff, right? There is also this idea that if I just, it reaches a point where if someone badgers you enough and pressures you enough, like maybe I'll just get it over with. Like I'll bite the bullet, I'll lay there, I'll dissociate, and then it'll be over, you know? So we need to have a conversation about how that's a norm for folks.
Well, and it's such a norm that just doing that type of thing is part of being in a relationship, and that's the requirement for a relationship.
And part of doing your duty as a woman in a hetero relationship.
Especially as a wife. I was Googling this before we got here. Marital rape wasn't first even legally challenged until 1979, and it wasn't made illegal in every state in the country until 1993. Let me rephrase that. Until 1993, in some 15 states,
years ago.
In some states, there were places where you could, it is 2018, Brittany, it's 2018. But in 1993, there were places where you could be sexually assaulted by your husband and there was zero legal recourse.
Yeah. So we don't have a lot of time. We knew that this was going to be a struggle to fit everything that we wanted to say into this podcast, but we want to close things out by really thinking about, what do we do with Aziz Ansari? Like, what can men do? And I'm not going to hashtag not all men this. We know it's not all men. But, you know, the reality is that this is most men. This includes even the good guys. This includes even those who are really well-intentioned. This includes people like Ansari who self-identify as feminist, right? What do we do? Like, how do we have a more nuanced conversation? How do we ensure that bad sex is not the norm? And there are really, really easy ways, I feel like, to move forward from this place.
So part of it is changing the way we have conversations about consent and centering what Brittany and I have said again and again about that fundamental care and empathy. Part of it is demanding emotional intelligence from men.
Mm-hmm.
Women and femme people are socialized to have those caretaking roles as mothers, as caregivers, as all the roles that women have been bottlenecked and forced into filling for years and still voluntarily fill. But that emotional labor is so ingrained from a young age, and men aren't required to learn that. And it's so clear and apparent when those nonverbal cues are ignored again and again and again, or perhaps even not seen.
Yeah.
Because men haven't been trained
to be perceptive, to be empathic. Emotional intelligence, this word has been, it's kind of come up as like a buzzword right now, but it is the ability to identify and manage your own emotions and the emotions of others. And so one of the skills of emotional intelligence is emotional awareness. You should be able to regulate your own emotions, and you should be able to assist in the regulation of other people. So whether that involves cheering them up or calming them down. And so this great piece in the Mary Sue by Teresa Giussino, she's like, just listen, like pay attention. And Megan Garber says, listen, read the room. It's only fun if we're both having fun. And you can't, if you are attuned to it, like you cannot miss those nonverbal cues. You cannot miss the way that someone is nonverbally expressing their discomfort if you just take the time to pay attention.
And it is our job as human beings, to paraphrase Teresa Giussino, to take care of each other.
Mm-hmm.
You
should share that whole quote.
Okay, I'll read the whole thing. So sexism teaches us that it's women's job to take care of men. To worry, as Flanagan does in her piece, about men's careers and men's well-being and how well men will fare in any situation. Feminism teaches us that it's the job of human beings to care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
That applies to our family relationships, our friendships, our sexual encounters.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us can do better at that. I can do better at that. I'm constantly growing in my own empathy. And we need to demand of men that they do the same.
Yeah. I'm gonna just leave it there. There's nothing more to say beyond that. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.